Welcome to the next edition of our speaker series. This is John Patika Jr. with the Patika Wealth Management Group here in Clearwater, Florida. And alongside me, as always, is the senior member of our group, John Patika Sr. And also wanted to mention we've got an additional member of the team, veteran advisor Steve Murray, who will be more properly introduced on future podcasting calls. But for today, we have our special guest, Joe Cavatoni, who's joined the World Gold Council in 2016. And Joe's had a three-decade career in the financial services industry. He's got expertise in areas of global capital markets. And interestingly enough, he spent more than 15 years in Asia. So welcome to the call, Joe.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Joe, I read the World Council 30-year edition of Gold Demand Traders and thought I'd get you on the call because I found it fascinating to talk about it. But first, we will go into the background of gold, maybe from the Romans to the conquistadors to now. But if you explain a little bit about your organization and then maybe get into a little bit of the background first, I'm always fascinated by gold going back into history.
Absolutely. And in the years that I've been in the markets, it's rare that I get to talk about thousands of years of history with respect to an asset that I'm talking to. But thanks again for having me on the call. And just very briefly on the background of the World Gold Council, we're an organization that was formed over 30 years ago. And as you've mentioned, I've been nearly 7 years with the organization. And we serve as a market development organization. And what that really means is we look at this industry entirely, and we do projects and initiatives to make it better. In addition to that, we complement that work with research, data, insights, so that we can continue to educate people about the gold market from mine to market, but also make it better so that they have a better understanding of gold, they have a higher level of trust of the gold that they look to buy and own, and also just continue to improve access to it so they can use it as an effective vehicle for either investing or, for that matter, even if they're in the consumer side, just understanding it overall. And so we do a lot of work globally. We've got offices in China, India, Asia, the Middle East, obviously in London and New York. We have people all over that are pushing this global gold market forward. And actually, what's most interesting for people to understand about us is that we are a not-for-profit organization, and we represent 34 of the world's largest gold mining companies. And that is why we continue to work to advance the industry.
All right, let's go into the history.
Let's talk a little bit about that. So this is an asset that's been around for thousands of years. It's been prized for thousands of years. I think what's interesting about it as an asset class is that it is a commodity. It's served as money. It's served as an asset to back currencies. So it plays a really unique role in history, but it also plays an incredibly important role as it relates to the world we live in today from a financial, but also from a consumer perspective. So we estimate that over history, 209,000 tons of gold, think about that size, 209,000 tons of gold have been mined through human history since it's been tracked. In addition to that, we think 90-some-odd percent of that has been mined since the 49ers, the 1849ers, were in California looking and exploring and prospecting for gold. So most of this is really a recent phenomenon. It's recent history. But it does date back to the Roman times. There's stories in history around Caesar paying his soldiers in gold. There's lots of different factoids. I thought I'd give you guys just two quick, really interesting sound bites. You know, I've got a lot of them, but I thought I'd share two quick fun facts about gold. Number one, the human body maintains a temperature on average of 98.6 degrees. And one of the reasons, not the only reason, that gold is attractive as a jewelry is because of its conductivity of heat. And it rapidly reaches that body temperature, making it comfortable and appealing for people to wear, in addition to the beauty and the bling, so to speak, that comes along with wearing jewelry and its role that it could play as a store of wealth as a jewelry item. That's one interesting fun fact. The other one is, I want everybody to get a mental picture of one of these large bars that you might see either on TV or in an advert. And the U.S. Federal Reserve holds 6,700 tons of gold. Now, if you think about that large bar, that would be 530,000 large bars. Now, I've had the opportunity to go to vaults and see things down in the world of mining. And to think about some people that are sitting there managing 530,000 bars like that. It's a lot of work, but it's an amazing mental image that you can get around the amount of gold that the U.S. alone holds in its Federal Reserve system. So it's two fun facts about gold. And yeah, look, it's been in history. It's been a critical part of it. And there's lots to discuss.
I've heard these different stories, like if you put all the gold at 209,000 tons, like on a tennis court, it goes up so many feet, or a couple of train cars, where all the gold mined in the world. Do you have any cutesies on this?
We do. We have a great visual on our website, and we love to talk to it. Think about a cube that's 73 feet high by 73 feet wide. That's how big the stock of gold, all the gold that's tracked and traced and known to have been mined and consumed, would be. That's a huge consumption amount of gold. That's broken down roughly, if you think about how that would stack up, would be about 46% in the form of jewelry. There would be about 22% in bars and coins. Some of those bars would back financial instruments like ETFs. About 17% of that would be in the form of central bank holdings. And then there'd be another about 15% that would be in other forms, whether it's in technological use or medical use or in other forms of raw material that would be held by people. So it's a big cube, and it's actually a pretty amazing thing when you have an opportunity to see gold in person. It's a fascinating experience.
Is there something our clients can visit? Can they go to that website?
Absolutely. If you go to gold.org, you can find the website around our organization. You can find lots of the historical information around gold. You can find that visual and also a market primer that'll tell you a lot about some of the history of gold. And I also want to make sure that I give you guys a scale of what that stock of gold above ground. That's about a $14.5 trillion market. You hear lots of people talking about other assets and now gold's this and that. Just think about the size of that market. That is a $14.5 trillion market. Again, at gold.org, you can find all the information you need. Within there, you'd have a tab that can take you to the investment side, too, where we talk about the investment case for gold and different aspects of gold itself.
Now, the other part of the gold that's fascinating to me is that today's usage, we're always investment thinking. You know, should we invest in it? Should we not? How's it look going forward? Let's talk about how it's used in, there's several different things we're going to talk about, but let's start with technology. How's it used?
Yeah, you know, you're picking probably the smallest area of demand, but what I think is probably the area of demand that is probably least well understood. And it makes up, on average, over the last 5 years, about 7 to 8% of the demand and consumption for gold. And what you have is, if you think about things you're using day to day and the conductivity that I mentioned around heat, but if you think about the electrical conductivity, your iPhone, your iPad, the electronics we're using day to day, and increasingly so in those items, electric vehicles, there are uses for gold in all of those different electrical applications. And that's probably about 70 to 75% of what gets used in what we call technology. But there are also other areas where you think about gold, probably less so than maybe you really need to. And it's actually in terms of the use of medical applications. So I said it's a good conductor of electricity. It's a good conductor for electronic devices. Just before I move into the medical side, I would probably call people's attention to the fact that we have a series called The Golden Thread. It's on YouTube. I would encourage this 5-part series for people to check it out if they get a chance, because it goes into all these different other areas within technology, whether it's the use of satellite technology and large reflector materials that get used in spacecrafts, but also in really interesting fun things like race cars. We have a series on the McLaren team that used it for a heat conductivity with respect to what they were using on a high-end race car. But switching to the medical side of things, an increasing level of attention that gold's getting, and it gets used in the diagnostic tools and in developing ways to treat disease. I think that everybody has probably been dealing with this world of COVID that we've lived through, and everyone's familiar with an expression, a lateral flow assay or a lateral flow test. It'd be important for everybody to understand that there are minute amounts of gold that get used in things like the tests for COVID. And we saw hundreds of different gold-based tests developed that could be used for reliable diagnosis of all different types of disease. But That's actually a really interesting little soundbite around gold's use on the medical side, lateral flow testing and testing for other diseases like cancers and different things. It's getting an increasing level of adoption there. But again, probably the smallest of the different areas of demand that continue to take up the gold market. I think the two that pretty much dominate that would be jewelry or consumer gold and also investment gold. And those are where we hear a lot about the jewelry market and people who are buying gold for their investment portfolios. And then the last piece I would say to you would be consumption from the central banking community. These central banks over the last 14 years, and when I say these central banks, I'm referring mainly to emerging market central banks, have been looking at their reserve portfolios and looking at the benefits of having a diversifying asset like gold. Remember, this is an asset that trades $150 billion a day. They have that in their portfolio as well. And that's actually been an increasing level of consumption for gold as well.
Joe, now we had a conversation with a Goldman Sachs analyst, and he was talking about cultures. The huge demand growth lately is because India, who has an extra billion people than us, they have a culture of wearing and buying gold, put into their dowries, I guess a little bit of China. So if you can talk a little bit about where is the demand going to come from? Maybe India, China, citizens, governments, that kind of thing. If you could cover that a little bit, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I think that you mentioned our 30-year report that we put out on gold demand trends. And actually, going back in time, you would find that most of gold 30 years ago, when we published this, rather, it's kind of funny when you see it in person, you can see it's actually got a really interesting font type, and it was hard copy only. We've obviously modernized that. But what you would find back 30 years ago in 1992 was that most of the demand for gold was in the form of jewelry, and that was in the form of developed markets like the U.S. or throughout Europe. And now what we've seen over the past 30 years is the development of both China and India as super consumer markets for gold. There were regulations and changes that the government made, which permitted gold to be consumed in more legal ways. And that was in the form of not only jewelry, but in small bars and coin format. And so jewelry, bars and coins in markets like India and China make up at times nearly 50% of the demand that gets taken down on an annualized basis for gold. So you have two huge markets that have a long history of an affinity for wealth maintained in gold and an appreciation for gold in the form of jewelry. And these two markets have particularly increased their overall level of consumption to today, where they were less than 20% back in 1992. Now they're a dominating kind of super consumer market across the board. And that's retail. That's people that are feet on the street buying into different local shops. And those are people who are using it not only as an affinity for an item that looks precious and is a very nice thing to wear, but it's a form of wealth preservation. They're storing their wealth in it. So it's really interesting because when you have a market like the U.S. where maybe investment demand is down, you would see potentially in China, and we saw this in first quarter, China was actually having people coming out from COVID lockdown and they were making investments in gold. They were buying it in the jewelry form and in bar and coin demand. So you have this dual nature that plays out. And that's what we see on a global basis. We see demand in the form of jewelry and consumption, and that grows when people get wealthier or they want to use it as a form of savings. We have investment form of demand, which is like ETFs or bars and coins through the platform that you offer. And then you have technology. But then again, that central banking community. That central banking community continues to step in, and at price dipping, where we're seeing it right now, we're at like 1911, 1912 in terms of the gold price. This is when central banks step in and they continue to add it to their reserve portfolio. So you have a wide range of different consumers, a different markets, and a different uses of the gold in portfolios. And it's exciting because most gold comes either from mining, recycled gold, or it comes from gold that already exists. And that limited supply feeds into this growing area of demand with lots of different motivating factors behind it.
Well, before we move that to the supply side, also the governments, are you finding the Russians and the Chinese? I mean, is there a way to track that, the government buying of gold?
Yes, there definitely is. So the first thing I'd say is that within our gold demand trends report that we publish on a quarterly basis, We include what is officially reported, and also working with market professionals like Metals Focus, we go about doing our own anecdotal work to find out how much each of these sovereigns may be buying, whether it's for a reserve portfolio or for other purposes. But we do our best to track all that information and publish that on a quarterly basis. And again, it's been emerging market central banks that have been the largest consumers of gold in their reserve portfolios. So they're really making a big push to diversify their asset pools, whether that's away from the dollar or the euro or treasuries or whatever it may be. It's an increasing level of demand. And it's actually been quite substantial. Last fall, we saw the Chinese central bank buy almost 400 tons of gold in the fourth quarter alone, which was actually an enormous amount of purchasing over a very short period of time. And actually, we have that information and we publish it quarterly. I would encourage people to keep an eye on it, because understanding the dynamic of where this demand is being taken up, you'll understand how to see where the price of gold will take you over the next 6 months, year, and over the long term.
Well, let's move to the supply side. You know, how do you source gold? I watch occasionally Gold Rush on Friday nights, and that's kind of small stuff. And then you got your Barrick and your Newmont Gold, the majors. Yeah, why don't you talk about that for a couple of minutes?
Yeah, so pretty simple. You're right. The Gold Rush TV program is a fun one. I like to watch it myself personally. But gold comes from three main sources. It either comes from the existing stocks that are just being exchanged and traded amongst ourselves. It comes from new mine production, or it comes from recycled gold. So taking a bar, for example, and turning it into jewelry, or taking jewelry that's no longer wanted and turning it into a bar. So those are the three main sources. Most of that new gold coming into the market, as it's deemed, would come from mining. About 75% comes from mining, and about a quarter comes from recycled. Recycling, you should think about that type of market will kick into place when the prices dip, and mining actually kicks in when the prices are rising. So there'll be a little bit of flex on those 75-25% breakdown, but it'll ultimately come in those kinds of price moments. So right now is when we would probably see more recycling take place with the price levels. And as the prices increase, you'll see the miners kick in with more supply coming into the market. But you've nailed it in terms of the names that are household names, Newmont and Barrick. These are firms that are producing, amongst these other large firms that we work with, they're producing somewhere in the range of 75-80% of the gold that's mined in the world. The residual comes from what we would refer to as artisanal mining. And that's actually, you know, small-scale mines, privately owned, areas where in emerging markets, you tend to see people who have an opportunity to uncover a mining site and they go about dealing with it direct. But most of the mining that we see in the system is from the large-scale miners. 60% of it comes from emerging markets or developing countries, and that would include 25% coming from Africa, 19% from Asia, and about 16% from South America. But we still have mine sites that are active in both the U.S. and Canada, and also throughout the old Soviet Republic in terms of other areas of sourcing. So that's where they come from.
Let's talk about how to invest in it. I know you've had a career in this. I know of ETFs, and you can get individual stocks, or you can buy bullions or coin. Maybe you can touch on each of those.
Sure. So over time, what has happened is that the landscape for owning gold has actually developed in a very favorable way, and that's what's actually shown to have shifted over our gold demand trends over the last 30 years. It's been mainly a jewelry consumption in 1992. Now you have a real balance between investments, jewelry, technology, and central bank buying. But what I think is important for everybody to understand is that there are bars and coins that can be purchased. And I think that the process that you offer through your platform is one that's great. People should trust it, understand it. And actually, there's an easy way for them to go about seeing the prices, feel good about the transparency around the quality of the gold. And ultimately, it's an easy mechanism which has the need for you to understand the price of gold and also understanding a little bit about physically taking delivery of that gold if that's what you choose to do. If you choose to actually make it a little easier from that aspect, you can go about owning a financial instrument, mutual fund or a gold fund or an exchange-traded product would be an easy way to go about doing it. Some of the largest products in the U.S. are GLD, the Spider Gold Shares, or IAU, the iShares Gold product. They're very liquid, easy to buy. You would buy them the same way you would buy the outright stock in your portfolio. And you can choose to do other items as well. You can look at the futures market, which I think is a little bit more levered. And I think it's a little bit more sophisticated in terms of trying to trade it because it does have a maturity date and it rolls over. Or you maybe take a look at some of the mining companies, but understanding you're getting not only the price performance of gold with a miner, but you're dealing with a management company that's going to be running that company. So you've got that element of gold. So you've got choices in physical form, financial instrument form, and also just from terms of different indirect exposures like futures and mining companies.
So I've had more people over the last 10 years and more recently wanting to take delivery of gold. I always discourage him on the bullion part. I think it's tungsten weighs the exact same weight as gold, so the fraud is part of that. And when you take delivery, you got to consider insurance at home and things like that. But we do both, but we recommend if they want bullion that they store it. But coins, American Eagle, Maple Leaf, that kind of stuff. Can you talk to that?
Sure. I think the first thing that I tell you to people is within our website, we could actually give you a great framework for getting yourself ready if the decision is to buy gold in physical form or in that deliverable form. Invest.gold is where we would send people, and that's a website. In there, we lay out our retail gold investment principles and our guidance for about how to go about looking for it, focusing in on the price transparency, understanding what you're buying in terms of the purity and the quality of that. In addition, we would also make sure that people understand what they're experiencing from a premium perspective. You know, you and I were speaking previously about the fact that if a premium sounds too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. So you need to stay with trusted partners. You need to have the right questions asked and answered to your satisfaction. And I think dealing with a firm like yours and through the channels with which you operate, you could feel good that the risk of a tungsten drill and fill kind of outcome is pretty low, if that not at all, because I think that that's actually something that trusted partners will make sure you have no risk of fraud or anything to that effect. I think when you buy these coins, just again, understand the type of coin you're buying. Are you buying the investment coin, which will have a level of premium versus something that would be deemed numismatic or collectible? And that's going to basically be a little bit more difficult to understand for the average investor, because that's a corner of the market where people are paying higher premiums based on exclusivity and scarcity. But I also would say that that's where it tends to happen when people get confused and pay more than they need to in terms of a premium. So go with trusted partners, take a look at our website, understand the framework with which you could use to kind of really do the right due diligence on making the investment. And if all of that sounds too complex for you, I'm sure you and your team can handle everybody's needs by selling them an exchange-traded fund, which is an acceptable form of operating and owning gold in the market. And I can give you my certainty because we're a principal sponsor for two of these ETFs in the market. So we do all the work behind the scenes to make sure that they operate properly. That's GLD and GLDM. These are two products where the gold is definitely there, the operating procedures are clean and clear, and the SEC regulates the product. So definitely look at this guidelines for how to make an investment in physical form. If it's too complicated or you want just an easier way of getting it done, then go with the ETF.
Yeah, last thing, we're running short on time, but people in the past have used gold as a hedge to inflation. I don't know that that works lately, but you know, also a hedge on currency devaluation. I just want to get your thoughts on that before we wrap up.
Yes. So on our website, we publish the investment case for gold. We talk about the features of what gold has to offer, the long-term returns that it provides, the liquidity that it offers, the diversification benefits in particular that it brings to your portfolio. One of our challenges with gold right now, and by the way, we're still up year to date, stack ranking, we're probably fourth or fifth in terms of overall performance of assets that people would have in a diversified portfolio. We're still up nearly 5% year to date, to many people's surprise. But what gold is doing is it's actually providing you a long-term return. And why it does that is it's simply a store of value over time that people will flock to. But when we're in a moment like we've been experiencing with rate hikes that are active, this is when gold is a source of liquidity and actually secondary to other assets that might be primarily focused on by investors. So we're seeing a lot of turnover in bond portfolios and rebalancing in equity portfolios. And that means that that gets a lot of attention and the opportunity short term for investors in that spot. And what we tend to see is once that settles, and when we see this rate hike cycle from the Fed come to a close, we're going to come out of it on the other side. And that's when people will be allocating again. And the role of gold balancing out a portfolio will tend to show that strong trajectory of a price performance. So we're seeking these headwinds right now in terms of what's happening in the market. But this will settle once we start seeing the rate hike cycle slow down and the inevitable rate cuts that the Fed will get to over time. It's just a question of how much longer we have to watch this.
Great. This is John Jr., Joe, and we are getting towards the end of our time here, and it's very informative. I think we could talk all day about this, especially with client conversations. It seems that gold always comes up. But before we close, any final thoughts you want to touch on before we end our call?
I think the most important thing for everyone to understand is that gold should be considered a strategic investment in a portfolio. Like every other asset, it's going to have price volatility on the short term. Look beyond that when you understand how gold plays a role in your investment portfolio. It's strategic. You should have an allocation. You and your team can help people determine the right amount per portfolio. On average, we see about 5%. Think about it that way. Don't get caught up in the excitement of price movements on the short term. Think about it long term.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Joe, again. We really appreciate the conversation.